Thank you for doing this interview with us, Noah. Three Uzbeks were arrested. And what you hear from the Uzbek community is that they hope that this was a misunderstanding and that these boys will be freed very soon. And Uzbeks think that it was unfortunate that the United States is getting to know about the Uzbeks through these events.
Well, I think that's definitely unfortunate if people would associate Uzbeks living in the United States with this, because, I mean, I know lots and lots of Uzbeks living in the United States, and I've never met any who had any sympathies for ISIS, and, you know, all of the Uzbeks that I know are horrified by the things that ISIS do. I read a really wonderful essay probably 2 weeks ago, just after the Jordanian pilot was executed, or after the video was released of his execution, you know, from an Uzbek living in the United States, talking about how it's really hard to be an Uzbek Muslim living in the West, because you're horrified and afraid of ISIS, because they will target you too. As a Muslim who doesn't condone any of their beliefs or acknowledge their claim to power over territory, but then at the same time, as people, especially in the West, associate this with Islam in general, it makes them suspicious of Muslims, and they don't understand that the vast majority of Muslims, including Uzbeks and all of the Uzbeks I've ever met, are absolutely horrified at these things, you know, in the same way, and are horrified that someone would do this in the name of their religion, because it just doesn't work. It doesn't square with the way that they see themselves as Muslims, or the way that they understand Islam in any way.
Mm-hmm. You see, when you look at these Uzbek boys in New York, you look at their online postings, they were disillusioned. They try to find meaning in their lives. They were influenced by messages on social media, and they became increasingly radicalized, if you read the media. And then, yet these young men had jobs. They were green card holders. They were business owners, and they were fluent in English. Where exactly does that start? How do they become radicalized?
Well, the coverage that I've seen, at least I haven't gotten detailed background information on all of them, but the one that I had seen information on doesn't really fit that profile. He was working at a King Euro, I think, chopping salads, and was not fluent in English, and was at one point homeless before he got that job. I'm not sure what it was with the others, but I mean, even for people who do okay with jobs or with money, a lot of times living in a foreign country can be a very isolating experience. And especially if you don't feel welcomed in the country that you're living in, or if you don't feel like you can assimilate into the culture, it can be a very isolating experience. And in the past, you know, I don't know a lot of the details on this case, but on other ones that I've watched in the past, they follow this pretty typical pattern where people live here for a few years, and they may have work, and they may have legal residence and this sort of thing, but they become really frustrated with their lives. They wish that they could go back home, but they can't. They want to be able to connect with the community. They want to be able to connect with other people, but they can't. They aren't able to do that for different reasons. And so they end up, like you said, just trying to find some meaning for their lives and trying to find some sense of community, and they get welcomed with open arms by extremist recruiters who are willing to welcome anyone as long as they'll agree to their ideology and to their goals. And so I think they fall into this in the same way that people end up joining cults of different types, they are vulnerable to it for the same kinds of reasons.
There's a debate on the number of Uzbeks participating in ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And you argue that there are several hundred Uzbek militants, not thousands.
Well, my argument is, or my statement is, that the evidence that I have seen would support an argument that there are several hundred. Like I said at the talk, there are lots of reasons why social media is problematic to use as evidence to make any sort of argument, because people lie on social media all the time, and certainly the groups themselves have every reason to try to portray their numbers as larger than they actually are in order to make themselves look more powerful. And there are lots of reasons why it's probably not a good idea to make definitive statements about it. But I would say that the evidence that's available on social media would support an argument that there are a few hundred Uzbeks, Uzbek fighters in the Islamic State. And we don't really know how much larger the camp numbers may be. We see evidence that there are families there are children there. So, you know, the total number of people may be a little bit larger, but the core number of actual fighters doesn't appear, with the evidence that I see, to be larger than a few hundred.
I see. In your research, you mentioned that most significant common trait inside ISIS sympathizers among Central Asians is not religion, but resentment. Tell us more about that, please.
My general argument was that this is the narrative that seems to resonate more among the people who are interested in ISIS and who are discussing ISIS in the discussions that I've looked at. The narrative that resonates strongest seems to be the one about resentment. It's religion as an identity, being Muslim as a part of belonging to a bigger whole or belonging to something that's more powerful than just the individual, not Islam as a religion, not Islam as a religion that's practiced by a billion people in other contexts around the world. It's more about belonging to this identity, and then that comes from this feeling of resentment. Resentment for not having opportunities that are available to others, for having a very difficult life, for having to leave your homeland and your family and, you know, the land of your ancestors and go and work somewhere else, and situations that are, for a lot of people, an experience of real humiliation, especially in Russia, and it can be in the United States or in the West too. If you feel like you are a second-class citizen in a foreign country, in a foreign culture, then that leads to a lot of frustration, and it's that kind of frustration that I think the Islamic State sympathizers and recruiters have been good at trying to fuel. That's kind of their main narrative. They want to portray themselves as the defenders of Islam against what they say are the things that cause all this oppression. You know, they blame everything essentially on the United States and on the West, and then they portray themselves as this counterforce to the United States. But it's not a very coherent argument, and it's one that depends on an awful lot of misinformation.
Just additional info that I wanted to share with you. The Uzbek authorities haven't said anything about the events in New York, but the Kazakh Ministry of Foreign Affairs issued a statement saying that a 19-year-old Ahror Saidakhmetov, who was arrested in New York at JFK Kennedy Airport when he was trying to board the plane to Istanbul, he is a citizen of Kazakhstan. He left Kazakhstan in 2011 when he was 16 to the neighboring Uzbekistan. He lived there since then, and then since then he never went back to Kazakhstan. He is from Turkestan, the eastern part of Kazakhstan. And his relatives, or Saidakhmetov himself, haven't asked for help from the authorities of Kazakhstan yet. But if he does ask for help, the Kazakh authorities are ready to provide him with legal assistance.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the statement says.
Okay.
The U.S. authorities are asking members of the Uzbek community and religious leaders to come forward if they fear that some Uzbeks are being radicalized. What do you think? How else can the community respond in this situation?
Well, I think community response is very important for these things, and because a lot of times this pattern that we see happen over and over again is that young people in particular get very isolated and get very lonely, and they spend more of their time looking for relationships online than they do in real life. And I think if they have a community that they can feel involved in, if they have people checking up on them, you know, asking how they're doing, inviting them to come to mosque or inviting them, you know, to come to dinner and things like this. And the community is not responsible. The community shouldn't be held responsible for the actions of one individual, certainly in any case. But I think there really is a positive role that the community can play just in watching out for their younger brothers and to kind of, if they start to become concerned, or they start to feel like someone is maybe getting interested in something that's going to be harmful for them, because at the end of the day, this is what's going to happen. I mean, it may have been for these kids in their very best interest that they were arrested before they were able to go, because had they gone to Iraq or Syria, it's very likely that they were never going to come back, that they were going to be killed in this conflict, in addition to whatever terrible things they might have ended up doing themselves. So I think this is a win for law enforcement and for the community, and it's in the best interest even of the suspects, should they prove to be guilty, that they were prevented from going. And I think there are things that the community can do on the grassroots level so that it doesn't have to get up that far, that there are interventions that people can do with their neighbors and with their friends and with their cousins and this sort of thing before they end up in JFK ready to get on the plane. And that would be the best outcome in this situation. I mean, it's good that they weren't able to go if that's really what they were intending to do. But I mean, the even better outcome is for the community to help, pull them back from this and help them understand that this is not going to be a good thing for them and that this is not the right thing to do. And one of the other things I guess I can say that I see happen very commonly, and that I heard in some of the reporting for this too, is that the people who are willing to go have also reached the point where they're willing to die or interested in dying. And so I think that tells us something about their state of mind too. I mean, they've reached a point where they feel so isolated and depressed that what they want basically is to kill themselves. They're suicidal, but they want to commit suicide in a way that has some sort of larger meaning for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I think there may be some important insights that come from that too, and some important community interventions that can work at that aspect of the issue too.
Thanks again.
Okay.